Right now, we're talking about speech and academic freedom. The buzz on college campuses these days seems to be mum's the word, or at least be careful what you say. Recently, college faculty have been in the hot seat for expressing opinions that have offended others. Last month, Harvard University President Lawrence Summers suggested at a conference that innate differences between men and women might explain why fewer women enter or succeed in scientific fields. Ward Churchill, a professor at the University of Colorado, wrote an essay several years ago, in 2001, in which he referred to workers at the World Trade Center as little Eichmanns. It came to light last month when he was invited to speak at Hamilton College in New York State. The controversies that ensued raise a basic question. How is academic freedom faring these days? Is it at risk, or are these incidents part of the normal ebb and flow of academic dialogue? We'd like to hear from you. Are you a college professor or a student with concerns about academic freedom on your campus, or is it alive and well? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. To help us sort through this debate about academic freedom in the post-9/11 world, we turn to Bob O'Neill, the former president of the University of Virginia and director of its Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. He's also a professor of law. Welcome.
Happy to be with you.
So what is the status of academic freedom on our campuses? Is there any risk at all here?
There are always risks. I rather like the ebb and flow characterization. I think it could be better. On the other hand, conditions certainly could be worse. And frankly, many of us would have feared in the days after September 11th, 2001, that the status of academic freedom would be a good deal worse than it has turned out to be.
Now, well, let's talk a little bit about the Ward Churchill case. Are you familiar with that?
I am indeed, yes.
Okay, so he was saying, of course, Little Eichmanns is a reference to Adolf Eichmann, who was one of the architects of the one of the leaders of the Nazi Party, and somehow I'm sure that it didn't suit a lot of people's sensitivities that workers who were killed in the World Trade Center would have been referred to as Little Eichmanns. Where does academic freedom come in protecting his right to say that? Where does, you know, common sense or decency or some other cultural value come in and say you can't say that?
Academic freedom, like freedom of speech, very broadly protects what a faculty member says, particularly outside the classroom. There is a general sense of responsibility which we all bear, but we also recognize that some of our colleagues are given to extreme statements. There is at least one exception, and that's an exception that actually may be tested in this case if the University of Colorado, after its investigation, does decide to impose some sanction, and that is the question of competence. If a person's statements or writings are so extreme that a faculty committee judges they lack competence in their discipline, then there may be some change in status, but really short of that kind of judgment, and it's a judgment that does have to be made by a faculty committee, we tend to accept and institutionally protect a very wide range of sometimes offensive, sometimes even hurtful or outrageous expression on the part of our faculty colleagues.
Now, I'm just wondering, I mean, you mentioned that academic, you said it was like freedom of speech. How does it differ? Are there greater protections or fewer protections?
Well, they're different. For one thing, all of us enjoy freedom of speech. Faculty members do enjoy academic freedom, as well as a citizen's freedom of speech, but there are these exceptions that I mentioned. For example, if a chemist or a philosopher or an English teacher argues that the surface of the earth is really flat, that we all know that, then that would be protected both by free speech and academic freedom. If, on the other hand, the person who keeps saying the earth is flat is a geographer or a geologist, it probably isn't protected. There's a real case of a Northwestern engineering professor who for years has denied that the Holocaust ever happened. He argues that 6 million Jews and others essentially were stricken by disease or took their own lives, that there never was a Nazi Holocaust. He teaches engineering, and he teaches engineering perfectly capably. So Northwestern has concluded, I think properly, that all of that is within his academic freedom.
Huh.
But if his field were modern European history, it's far less clear that his academic freedom would protect his right to make statements of that kind, even though his free speech would equally protect regardless of his academic discipline.
So now I'm just curious. You make me wonder whether people who say, well, you know, that evolution is wrong and that God created the earth in the 7 days that the Bible describes to us as the absolute literal truth, and this person is a biology professor. I mean, that must get you into some complicated issues there.
That one is a very difficult case. Fortunately, it seems never to have come to a testing point. I know of no creationist biologist or a biologist who's skeptical about evolution who has ever been put to that test, but you're quite right. That would be about the most difficult test of what we mean by competence.
Right. Difficult. Difficult issues. Well, let's hear what our callers have to say, and let's go to Alan in Pontiac, Michigan. Alan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I had a problem this last summer. We were talking about the war in Iraq. I was teaching a class about third world countries. And we got into a discussion. You know, the teacher's supposed to promote thinking. And my viewpoint was that I would like to see maybe a type of a lottery where all different types of Americans are fighting rather than just lower middle class and lower class people. So I was reported to my dean because of that.
Huh.
And I found that to be outrageous. And it makes you think. I mean, you know, you're not supposed to be turned in all the time for everything you say.
Well, but did your dean do anything, or
he had a discussion with me, and the discussion was, I want you to teach. You know, don't upset people. And that to me was, it was ridiculous. I don't think I did one thing wrong, and I don't think anybody else in the class did, except for the person that I didn't agree with me.
Yeah,
sounds to me as though you were challenging the students.
Yeah, I was, and I'm a Vietnam kind of person, so it's
there's a lot of feeling these days that students somehow have a right not to have their views challenged, not to be upset or unsettled by the presentation of unfamiliar or contrary views. And my feeling about higher education, and this is my 49th year of university teaching, so I've seen a lot of different classes and students and situations. In my view, the role of higher education is to challenge students and to take views that they may have brought from home or their communities and put those views to the test. You don't disparage a student's view, you don't humiliate a student, you don't exploit students, but simply challenging them and forcing them to see things differently, as it seems to me you were doing, that's a very different situation. That's really what higher education is all about.
Alan, thanks very much for that call. We're speaking with Bob O'Neill, former president of the University of Virginia, about the nature of academic freedom. And let's take another one of your calls. Let's go to Michael. Michael in Sumter, South Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So go ahead.
So I just have a comment to make. I'm currently a college student, and I am working towards my education degree. And my professors, particularly the religion and anthropology professors, have always prefaced our classes with telling us that there may be some subjects and matter that is covered that not everyone is going to agree with. And so that they just wanted to warn us beforehand that there may be some objectionable material. Now, I'm all for that approach because I hope to one day be a college professor myself, and I would like to think that I could be able to say and teach how I wish to without any chance of repercussions.
Okay, Michael, that's a good point. Thanks very much for making it.
That seems to me an admirable goal. The question whether a teacher ought to warn, I think, depends both on the nature of the material and on the age and sophistication of the students. I actually teach a course in constitutional law of church and state. Some of what we discuss could possibly be troubling to some students. Rather than warning anybody in advance, I just try to be very careful never to say anything that would in any way disparage any student's religious views. I think that's probably more helpful in the long term in a field like that than warning up front. But there are other situations in which a warning at the start may indeed be quite helpful.
Okay. Let's take another call from Jill in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Jill, welcome to the program. Jill, are you there? Oh, I'm sorry. I pressed the wrong number. Ron in Delaware, Ohio, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
More of a comment.
Okay.
I'm actually in college at the moment, and I've seen recently a documentary done by John Stossel called What's Happening to Free Speech in America. And as he went around to the various colleges, he isolated several issues, being cliques or different codes of conduct, things that people weren't allowed to say. And it seemed to him and even to me after watching the program that this is becoming more and more the norm, with sexual harassment issues and little government things that are coming into play. It seems our freedom of speech is being removed from us slowly, and I think they start at the colleges.
Ron, thanks for that point. You're listening to NPR Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Bob O'Neill, has there been? Can you see this erosion at all on the campuses?
I don't think so. I think many people feel or have been told that somehow the regulation of speech on campus is getting worse over time. I don't think that's the case. I think, if anything, there's been some relaxation in the last 10 years or so, less political correctness. There are lots of policies that are designed to encourage civility of expression, more restrained campus discourse, and so on. But that's a long way from a speech code, and those are not policies that are typically enforced. They're just in a handbook or on a web page for the purpose of getting people to think kindly and collegially about fellow students and other faculty. I don't think that necessarily means, and I don't see evidence of, a repressive atmosphere or continuing increasing encroachment on campus speech.
All right. Now let's try going to Jill in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Got it this time. Jill, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Had kind of a question and a comment put together. I've been in the university setting now as an instructor, non-tenured, obviously, for about 6 years, and have kind of watched and listened, because as a non-tenured person, that's all you're kind of able to do, really. But my question is, why, with the concept of academic freedom, which I believe in very strongly, and I understand the issues of trying to get students to critically think and look at their views and expand and globalize their views, but why is it acceptable for someone in that setting to say or use hurtful comments and words, and that's acceptable in the academic or university setting, but versus myself, who I'm a nurse, my husband, who's a physician, if we would say, for instance, the example I gave when I called in is that, you know, people with HIV/AIDS are compared to such and such. In my profession, that would seem so hurtful and so inappropriate, and I would be probably disciplined by several people, several of my peers in my profession, for comparing other human beings to something inappropriate. So I don't understand why in the academic setting, for instance, for this particular professor that they're looking at, this is an acceptable behavior.
Interesting. What do you make of that, Bob O'Neill?
I think the critical difference is where the statement takes place. If Professor Churchill had made statements of this kind in class, and particularly if he had directed them, say, to students who had relatives in the World Trade Center, or even had relatives in the New York City area, that would have constituted something pretty close to assaulting or demeaning a student's views or values in class. These statements were all made outside class. They were actually in an essay. We do distinguish quite sharply between what's said to students, especially in class, but also around the campus, and what's said simply out there in the larger world. evidence that I've seen that he has ever said any of these things to any students, particularly students who have any connection to the victims of the terrorist attacks of September 11th. That would indeed be a very different situation.
Jill, thanks very much. Go ahead. Did you have a response?
No, I just wanted to say that, I understand that, except for as a professor, he's representing a specific entity to those students, a specific role model. And so as a role model, whether he directed the comments to the students or not, I find the use of academic freedom in presenting a role model to students to be another piece to that story that should be looked at. As a nurse, I'm a role model to other nurses and other students. And okay. So if I would say something inappropriate, it affects the nursing role in general or the role of that professional
Jill,
in general.
Jill, thanks very much. We only have a minute left. I want to hear what Bob O'Neill has to say briefly.
It's a good point. I mentioned earlier that we in the academic profession do bear a special responsibility not only to speak for the institution when we're not authorized to do so, but also recognizing, as the caller just said, that we speak for our academic profession, our discipline, and that students are likely to pay more attention to what we say. That all comes under the heading of responsibility. The critical issues in a case like that of Professor Churchill are eventually to be judged by a faculty committee, a committee of his peers, in accordance with due process. The University of Colorado Regents have made clear that they understand that concept, and there will thus be a process during which exactly those questions are going to be raised.
Bob O'Neill, we have to stop there, I'm afraid. Bob O'Neill is the director of the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression and former president of the University of Virginia. In Washington, I'm Joe Palca, NPR News.